So today's the 14th of June, second day of the Football World Cup. It was like 4 years ago, New Zealand was playing the Football World Cup, and that was the only team to not lose a match, I think, in the whole. Of course, went home after the first round because those the Italians took a dive. Took a penalty that ended up being 1-1. But yeah, this year, I think Australia's in there. Cheering for Australia. But yeah, okay, it's got nothing to do with wisdom, but it's just on my mind. So yeah, there's a religion for some. So today's the third day of Sesshin, and welcome to those who've arrived in the last couple of days. Alison here will just be with us for today. And, so if it is your third day, then by now you really are starting to build up a bit of power. And so in Zen we call it Joriki, which means kind of spiritual power. It's like a sort of concentration of energy and activity that occurs after you've had a reasonable period of concentration, and so just the mind is starting to settle. Some of the activity is starting to filter out, and so the ability to focus is stronger. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it, but that's kind of the general kind of progression. And so, you know, having put in the hard yards, then we've really got one more full day. And so that's really the time to take advantage of it and to use all your energy to penetrate into this matter. And, you know, I think one thing we kind of get a little concern that we might, you know, blow ourselves out, or if we try too hard that something will weird will happen. Mostly it's kind of like pacing yourself, and but it's interesting actually just to pay attention to what happens if you really work hard. You don't have to grip, but it's using that energy to really focus in. And that again, that focusing is not particularly, it is using the mind to concentrate, but it's also, most of it is about noticing when you start drifting off or start thinking about things, or start justifying various kind of ways that you feel and making those real. The real effort is noticing those, and then bring yourself back to whatever your focus of concentration is. And it can be quite challenging to do that. But, you know, having paid your money and come here, it's good to get your money's worth. And it may never happen again. You know, it may never happen again. You just never know. So, and that letting go of thought, Uchiyama Roshi describes it as opening the hand of thought. It's like opening that hand. It's allowing it to just float off, to do what it does. And it's repetitive, it's just letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. Sometimes it's cutting off. Cutting off the mind road is a description that's in the first column, Mu. About how to practice with moves, cutting off the mind road. And both ways are okay. But really it's about disengaging that constant activity of thinking. It doesn't mean there are no thoughts, because thoughts, the mind produces thoughts. You know that. I know that. You can't stop thoughts. It's like trying to stop breathing. So we're going to have a practice of stopping breathing, because that's going to get us something. That's one way to stop thoughts. Permanently. One thing that's quite challenging for us is the that so we do the practice well, or we do the practice, and then we check. You know, we check and go like, how am I going? And so you kind of got seemingly one kind of activity going on, and then there's another one who's kind of watching to see how well we're doing. And Sung Sinan, who's a Korean Zen teacher, founded the Kwan Aum School of Zen, would call it checking mind. It's kind of the one eye open. It's just like watching and checking how we're doing. And it's kind of interesting because we all do it. You know, it's like whenever you're creating something, then we always kind of stand back a little bit and check how it's going. Is it going well? Is it not? And that's what we do in practice too. We also check our experience. You know, and it's normally, does our experience now match up with what I think it should be like? And that's kind of the checking. And putting it like that, you go like, well, of course, you know, been around Zen for a little while, you know, that's a silly thing to do, to check your direct experience with a thought or a concept or an idea. Which would you rather have? What are you saying, Ralph? It's like shopping for another experience that's better than the one you've got. And that's what we're doing, kind of checking. It's really hard not to do that. Because there's this mind, and you know, if we think of our mind as having various kinds of aspects to it, there's the seeking mind. And the seeking mind is the one that is the one that brought us to practice. It's the thing that pushes us to search for peace, tranquility. Whatever it is that we want to get out of practice, and that seeking mind is the one that is also doing that checking. Yeah, you know, it's saying, well, we know where we need to go, and it's over there somewhere. And come on, Shinko, move it along. Let go of that thought. How was that experience? Is that good for you? Okay. And that mind is that's the kind of mind that we end up getting quite frustrated with during practice. You know, we'd like to just have that seeking mind go off by itself, and we could be one with the Buddha mind. And so we could say this kind of seeking mind is a problem. And yet, as I kind of talked about on the first day, picking up one of Thich Nhat Hanh's kind of descriptors of mind, is that, you know, we have this in our life now, we have a relative truth and we have an absolute truth. And they're both two parts of our experience. And when we come into Zen, we start saying, I've had enough of the relative truth. And we might even devalue it and say, well, it's not really important. It's all one. It's all God. And so we kind of focus in on this attaining this one thing. And so when the seeking mind comes up, the checking mind comes up, we regard this as a great problem. We can get very frustrated with it. So But it's a fact. And it's a fact. Why is it a fact? Because it's a fact. I mean, just check it. There it is. And it's like the sun, the clouds, the pain in your legs. You know, it's a fact that this seeking mind exists. So there's no way that we can kill it. You know, it's like with children, that if you ignore their requests, I've got one daughter who's just like, oh, she's amazing. She's just, every time I say no, it's like she hasn't heard.
Olive.
And then if you do manage to actually think that you've dealt with it, then they'll come back in strange and unusual ways that you never thought of. So how do you manage with this seeking mind? Well, I don't know. But the I guess that, like, if you think about it, there are kind of various kind of schemes or paradigms we can think of with practice, and one way to work with that. With that mind is to first of all acknowledge, very much acknowledge its presence and to value that presence. And how do we do that? Because if we don't acknowledge that that value, then we're constantly battling with it. Constantly battling. Now, as I said before, there are these two aspects of mind which we constantly experience, which is the this relative mind and this absolute mind. So how do we how do we work with this this seeking mind? Well, because we don't, we don't let go of the seeking mind. You know, this seeking mind has, I guess, tremendous value. You know, it's the creator. You know, it's the desire for a bit of life, a better life, for ourselves, for others, the world, and it's constantly restless, constantly needling us on. It doesn't let you sit still. It means you can't accept your current state of mind. And it's so ingrained and so pervasive. I'll just read a little poem here. So this is a koan from the Gateless Gate. It's case 10. It's called Ching Shui, Solitary and Destitute. A monk said to Sao Shan, "I am Ching Shui, solitary and destitute. Please give me alms." Sao Shan said, "Venerable Shui, Ching Shui said, "Yes, sir." Zhou Shan said, "You have already drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in China, and still you say that you have not moistened your lips." This little story is where this monk called Ching Shui is talking to his teacher, and he describes a situation that he's in. He says, "I'm Ching Shui, solitary and destitute. Please give me alms." Now, that solitary and destitute to describe it in a certain sense is like he's achieved a certain, I guess, state, a certain appreciation that there's nothing more for him to gain. He's kind of achieved a certain quietude, a certain satisfaction. And yet, he says, "Please give me alms." And just interesting there, because even in this person here who's kind of done his work, and still that seeking mind that gives life, "Please give me arms." Still speaking. Zhou Shan says, "Venerable Shui," he just calls him. And Ching Shui said, "Yes, sir." And Zhou Shan says, "You have already drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in China, and still you say you have not yet moistened your lips." There are kind of many ways to take this koan, and I'm taking it a little bit differently, but you have not yet moistened your lips. You're still unsatisfied. And for me, that's a kind of really kind of prime position to be in, is this dissatisfaction. And why? Because without it, like I say, we can just settle down into this kind of that it's okay. There is, I guess, a kind of a fixed something to attain. And, we can wander around in Zen practice with this idea that this kind of this absolute, this oneness, this thing, which of course we know is out there because the Buddha told us, and I said something about it, and all the great Zen masters said something about it. But this the seeking mind doesn't buy that. This restless checking mind, which sometimes gets a bit of short shrift in Zen, is it's really one of the most valuable things that we have in our practice. And why? Because it's right present with us now, and it's a thing that comes up in session again and again and again. You think, "I wish it would go away." And it doesn't. It doesn't suffer fools. It doesn't suffer half-truths. It's relentless. Yeah, and isn't that wonderful? Isn't that a wonderful gift to have? Because otherwise we would kind of drift off with the Buddha into some nirvana heaven. You know, and there's a tremendous amount of work to do in the world, you know, both for ourselves and for others. You know, and this mind is the thing that activates that. So that's kind of the first thing I really want to say is that don't be worried or concerned about that, because that is absolutely your life. And it's hugely valuable. So we don't want to get rid of it. And, there's always an and in things. Like any kind of voice, at a certain extent, it doesn't have the whole truth. You know, we all believe when we take a certain position that we have the whole truth. But this, because that particular seeking mind doesn't have the whole truth. And so our practice, especially in Sesshin, is to allow that mind to direct us, but not to tell the whole story. So that mind will point to practice, and that mind is practice. You know, but that, again, the way we kind of loosen its kind of total hold is again to bring our attention to this direct experience that's happening here. And this Buddha mind is already taken care of. It tastes like this. Feels like this. Sounds like this. Smells like this. Thinks like England vs. Italy tomorrow at 9:30. Gonna miss it. Fuck. So again, there's two things. Don't be so concerned about the kind of seeking, that checking mind. It is the road home. And it points. It's the finger that's pointing at the moon. And practicing with it, we let go. And we come to this direct experience, which just as I said, is this direct experience, which is the simplest thing. Taste, touch, smell. What else? Hear it. See you. Thought. So in doing that, you know, we value the whole of our experience. The whole of our experience. And we don't need to cut off or devalue those aspects of mind that we see as troubling, and it's all leading on the way home.
I'll just finish with the something from Master Dogen.
He says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self, this thing, is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Study the Buddha way is to study the self. That's that mind. That seeking mind. Study the self. We forget the self. We let go. That's our practice of Zazen. When we forget, I don't know about the word forget, but when we let go of our thoughts and ideas, we're actualized by myriad things. What are those myriad things again? It's like you open your eyes, these are the myriad things. You're hearing the myriad things. You're thinking the myriad things. And you're smelling the myriad things. Those things are our body and mind. And your body and mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away. You're separate. You're separate body and mind. You know, you are none other than this light, the sound, the river. No trace of realization remains. Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's just how we are. And this no trace continues endlessly. So we've got one full day left. So engage, you know, everything you've got. You don't need to. But it does mean bringing your mind together. Use that spirit of inquiry to encourage yourself. And then letting go of thought come to this direct experience. Okay, let's finish.